What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Milwaukee Sports Performance Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Zachariah, who is the new director of ETS Lake Country that is going to be opening sometime this spring. Zachariah is originally from Washington State, where he grew up and attended Eastern Washington, getting his degree in exercise science and sports administration, where he had the opportunity to work with a lot of the D1 athletes at Eastern Washington, particularly focusing on football and track, before he's joined us here in Wisconsin. So thanks for the time and for coming on today.
Absolutely. Appreciate having me here as well.
So I always like to just start with a little bit of background, people that may be listening that aren't familiar with you or your story, but how did you end up in Wisconsin from Washington?
Absolutely. So all starts off, like, I was an athlete myself growing up, and I just really loved to move and do this and that. And at one point, I found myself in a weight room doing really well at it. And I was like, this is sweet. And so I wanted to continue doing things just like it. I went to college, though, not planning to be a coach. I went to college wanting to be an elementary school teacher.
Okay.
Love the idea of working with kids. I have a lot of fun working with kids. But then at one point during my path, I realized, well, being like a kindergarten teacher day in, day out, I might come home and be like, man, I'm not enjoying having to work more when I get home. And yeah. So I like the idea of separating the two. And then I found out about what I thought was athletic training, but it's actually strength and conditioning, because yep. There's a difference of the two. And I was like, man, this is sweet. Like, I love the energy. I love what I get to do. And I had a lot of great mentors while I was in college. And it just kind of grew into a passion of mine. Now, during that D1 experience, there was a lot of great things that happened, a lot of great mentors, but there's also a lot of challenges. One of the ones that I wanted to touch on is just like, I worked with some coaches, like track coaches, that didn't want me strength training their hamstrings. And that was something I was like, but they needed to stay healthy. Like, a sprinter needs to strength train their hamstrings. And it was something I thought was important that they needed to get done. And as a professional, I think it's my job to make sure I stand up for those kinds of values.
Yep.
And so I had to get out of that realm just because there was a lot of thought processes that were not aligned with me. And I pursued outside the college realm to the private sector, which brought me to ETS. And with ETS, I mean, they bought into me right away. They love who I am. They love what I want to do. And they love my passion. And they're located in Minneapolis, where I went to go just get trained on their systems. And they're like, hey, where would you like to go? We've got these locations we're looking at. And I was like, honestly, like, I got family in Wisconsin. Like, my grandma was born out here. I've got an uncle still out here. Like, I think this is kind of calling to me right now, especially out in this area. And so I would like to go out to the Milwaukee area to be closer to them and kind of reroute myself with them. And that's what brought me to this area.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you mentioned ETS, and I'm actually, it's interesting, but briefly worked over in Minneapolis. So when we chatted earlier, definitely familiar with ETS, but kind of growing in this area. So if someone's not familiar, hasn't heard of ETS, could you kind of give them a little bit of overview on what ETS is and what you guys do?
Absolutely. ETS, we're a youth strength conditioning company working with kids from 8 to 18. For our younger athletes, there's a category called Speed Plus, where they work on, so from 8 to 11, they only work on linear lateral change of direction work for a 45-minute session. And that's just working with their body weight, learning this kind of neuromuscular control, how to move efficiently, how to accept loads efficiently, and before we start loading them with other things, such as like barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, anything like that. And then once you hit about 12, we offer strength sessions for athletes. And what a session for that looks like, it all is dictated off of our eval. During the eval, what we look at as professionals and just myself, I look to see what any kind of limitations may be showing up so that they're not performing on the field as well. So, like, you know, a big thing that I see a lot in younger athletes is like arch control, glute activation, if they're mobile in certain spots or not, or if they just know how to move their body without having it feel like it's a glitch setting going down, if it's nice and smooth. So when I find out from there, it helps me program for what they have going forward. And then we go in, do a warm up. We do an activation series, which can be some linear speed, lateral speed, maybe some mobility work, maybe a competition. And then from there, we go to their lift, which one thing that I live by with my principles is I live by the KISS principle. And I'm going to try and select maybe 6 to 8 exercises. Some of them may be like one exercise is trying to knock out 2 birds with 1 stone to work on a couple different issues at the same time. And from there, like I want them to be efficient with their time and done in about 60 minutes. But a lot of what we do is teaching kids how to move, how to take care of their bodies, not just in the like putting load on their body, getting stronger, but also like how to nurture their body with nutrition, how to nurture their body with mobility work and flexibility work, but also conditioning and just how to grow the mind.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. I mean, there's so many, even just outside of sports, there's just so many good lessons that kids can learn in the weight room, in the performance room from, yeah, just like staying healthy, building good lifestyle habits, being active, learning about your body, all those things, you know, having a culture, learning to interact and be coached and all those things that it's the performance side is definitely key in getting athletes faster, stronger, more explosive, but it's kind of like the philosophy of not just limiting yourself to some of those basics and really being able to impact people.
Absolutely. And to your point, like you were saying, like the environment, you put yourself around a lot of people that are high achievers and want to do a lot of really good things. You're naturally going to get brought up with them, or going to bring people up with you, because that's the environment. That's the standard. We're all going to get better. And so if you surround yourself with people like that, you're likely to see that same thing continue on.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's awesome. Well, let's just dive into it. I know with ETS and you, like you're really locked in, focused on athlete training and athlete performance training specifically. So from your perspective, you kind of hit on your eval dictating a lot of stuff, but what are some of the just core elements of your approach or your philosophy when you're working with an athlete?
Absolutely. Couple of them, I live and die that I need to know the athlete. I like to build a relationship. I like to think I'm a pretty charismatic guy, and I like to sit down and get to know people. And I like to, you know, essentially play and have a good time. Two of my principles I live by, one is the KISS principle, but the other one is that the weight room is a, you know, playground, like we spoke about the last time I was here. And it's just, I want to be able to have fun there. I want this to be an environment that we all can enjoy being in. Like, I don't want it to be like, I have to go away and grind and get out. It should be somewhere we all feel comfortable being. And so it starts with just nurturing that relationship, getting to know them. They know me. We are able to communicate at any level. And so that's a lot of what works for us. But also, like, yeah, that KISS principle is one thing that I can't get over. How often I see people overtraining youth athletes, giving it too much work. Like, let's work on those simple things, do those really well, and we can see growth through that as well. Like, just getting the most minimum dose to response. We don't need to do 20 exercises to get better. We can do as simple as 6 exercises and get better if I do my job correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's just a really good approach too, because I think sometimes what I see with youth athletes is they always want to know what the pros are doing. And it's a question we get a lot in rehab of like, well, what would you be doing if I was a professional pitcher? It's like, well, sometimes the same thing, but sometimes it might be quite different because you can't do a push-up. And like the professional pitcher probably can do a good push-up, and we need to do some of these other things, but you have to master those basics. And if you can't squat or hinge or do a push-up or do a pull-up, just like those basic movements, probably don't need to get super fancy till you can do some of the you know, your bread and butter movements and exercises.
Absolutely, man. Everyone wants to do the most complicated, crazy looking thing, which I saw at the college level a lot too.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be doing the next best thing that looks great for the video to post and stuff. And I'm like, we don't always need to be doing that fancy stuff. Like, some people think you don't need to do a power clean to see the same vertical power response. You could do a trap bar jump. You could do a dumbbell jump. I'm like, absolutely, you can do those things as ways to grow your vertical power and strength. I think there's a time and place for everything. And, you know, their dose to response and who you're working with, like if they can't coordinate their body around a barbell, well, then yeah, let's not do an Olympic lift. But if they can, and we think it's appropriate to try and challenge that movement, let's do it. There's absolutely a time and place for every athlete. And that's where it comes to me as a professional, like, think about, okay, where are you at? Like, how do you move your body? Like, is this a good movement for you? Is this going to get a good response out of you? Or are you going to enjoy doing this too?
Yeah.
If you do, and all that's yes, then let's absolutely pursue this movement. But if not, like, let's find something that's best for you. Also, you're going to enjoy. I want you to do workouts that you enjoy doing. It's fun. You always want to come back.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. But I'm sure it's helpful for you coming a little bit from the college setting of like having an understanding. Okay, if I was a college strength coach, what would make me really happy if a high school kid could come in and do these things? Like, because then that kind of sets you the roadmap of like, man, if I could get my athletes to be able to be ready to go into a college weight room environment if they like to play in college and like be set up for success and have these core basics mastered, you know, you can kind of almost look at that, like, you know where they need to be, and you can kind of build that roadmap from the time they're even 8 years old to like, you don't have to get there when you're 9, but can I get you there by the time you're 18 to go step into that college weight room?
Absolutely. We can make those milestones like, hey, at this point we should be able to do this, and this. Like by the time you get ready to go to college, like I've seen that, I've been that coach for what I expected you to be able to do. And I can literally have a roadmap kind of slowly built out for what I'd like to see you do. And I think it's an asset for me and for the athletes I'm going to be working with, in the way that like I can give you like what the bridge is between the two.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Very cool. So I guess you kind of mentioned you cover a big age range, but even within those ages, you're going to have various athletes that might be novice. They've never been in a weight room before. Let's say, you know, let's take a high school freshman. You might have kids that have never even touched a weight, not familiar at all, versus, you know, kids that maybe are training at their high schools a little bit more familiar. What changes in your approach when you're working with that kind of novice athlete versus somebody that has a little bit more experience? Like what might be different about their experience with you?
Absolutely. One of the biggest things is like, I start with learning how they move, what they're efficient at, what they're not efficient at. So like, I truly get to know like what you have a good neuromuscular connection with. And so I try and break down the little details. I'm like, okay, do you understand how your body's moving through space? Based off that, I can kind of tell like what exercise selection we should be utilizing. That exercise selection can be as simple as like, we're doing body weight with some external band sources to teach motor patterns and emphasize maybe, you know, trying to drive our knees out so we're getting good glute activation. Maybe it's having our foot on top of a band that way. When we pull that band, that it's teaching you to keep your foot locked in the ground. Maybe it's starting simply as that and with your body weight, but it could go as advanced to, you know, a high level athlete that's been training with someone one-on-one for years on end, where they're able to go to like, let's say the Olympic lifts, like a full power clean, which is a very complex, hard level movement to learn and do efficiently to get the right response. And so that's kind of like your range. It could be as simple as like a small external source versus a heavy external load that you're having to move your body around. And that's kind of like the selection of exercises, but also advancement of certain drills as well. Some athletes, they need to start with just like marches to learn how to drive their arms up, get their knees driving high, and get full bottom leg extension. But some athletes can use different sources of, you know, doing curvilinear sprints, doing sprints with band tension behind them, pulling a chain, sled sprints, things like that. It can range just based off of what their body's capable of doing. You know, I can progress and regress as much as I need to within an arsenal. It really comes down to how they move. Like, how are you, where are you set at for me to be able to challenge you appropriately? So you're not, one, going to feel stimulated to the point of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like I can't do this and you want to quit, versus I feel like that was perfect. I feel really good about it. I feel confident. I want you to feel confident in my weight room. And you feel like, yeah, I want to try something else now. I'm ready to like keep doing the same thing. That way they always just keep feeling fresh, feeling good, and feel like they're able to bite off what they can chew.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. I use the analogy a lot of times with patients that like exercise is medicine. And like, you know, let's say you had a heart issue and you went to your doctor, you got heart medicine, too little or the wrong type, and it's not going to have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Too much or the wrong type might kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that sweet spot right in the middle. It's like the right dose of the right medicine. And that has, you know, the effect to help whatever blood pressure, heart, all that. And that's just kind of like what you do, what we do with injured people, what you do on the performance side is like, it's like a dosage. It's like finding that sweet spot, those movements, the amounts, the frequency, all of that, that gets the outcomes that people are looking for.
Absolutely. I use the term all the time, appropriate dose to response. Like, yeah. Can I give you the right dosage to get a response out of your adaptation? Perfect.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So I guess if you were kind of talking to an athlete, I think before we started recording, we were talking previously about just how busy athletes, especially youth athletes, are right now. You kind of mentioned that they're getting overtrained, they're doing way too much. So in this busy landscape where they've got high school sports and club sports and practice and games and all this stuff, like what's the benefit of adding performance training and really carving out time from a performance to go somewhere and do performance training to these athletes?
Absolutely. I think of the study that I was looking at for my graduate program, and it was on distance runners and the effects of doing a 2-strength training program 2 days a week for, I think it was 10 weeks. And then once they hit season, doing 1 a week for maintenance throughout the season versus a group that did not work out at all. They only did running. And the difference of the two, so the beginning part of the 20-week cycle is they saw increased strength and power performance in that 10 weeks where they were doing 2-per-week lifts. And then they went to 1 time a week in season, and they maintained what they developed in that 10 weeks throughout their season versus the other group that actually saw a decrease in their performance because they weren't maintaining muscle mass. They were starting to have joint issues, problems like that. And some of them actually ended up quitting the study because they're like, hey, I can't compete. Literally can't keep running. I got injured. And so that just kind of shows the effects that like resistance training and just appropriate training to keep your body healthy can do for you. Like 2 times a week showed for distance runners that you can see increased performance, but 1 time helped you maintain that throughout the season. And that's really a goal for me is I want to increase your performance certain times of the year. And during season, my main goal is to maintain your level of performance to vertical power, horizontal power, anything like that throughout the season. And so my recommendation is like, let's start on the preseason getting you stronger, but by all means, please continue doing something, if it's even at least once a week, of some kind of lower load, lower intensity resistance training throughout season. And we can add in some mobility stuff to make sure you're feeling fresh, some flexibility work, maybe some extra conditioning work just to make sure you're getting flushed out so everything's feeling nice.
Yeah.
That's my biggest thing for especially how busy kids are, is like, it's going to help you. Just that study alone can really correlate to like what it can do for you.
Yeah.
And I just live and die that like resistance training is going to help your performance. It should never take away. We're always an additive source to get you better. That's why every college, university that I know of has some level of training to allow their athletes to continue to get better.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, you kind of hinted at it too, but there's a huge, huge injury prevention aspect of it as well. Even outside of, I mean, personally, I think that availability is a key performance indicator of success. Like you can't perform on the field if you're not able to play. And there's a ton of studies that we use that, and I actually think they're interesting because I think people often will say like, oh, you have to get stronger to stay healthy throughout the season. And these studies look at it and it's like, you just have to go into the weight room and follow a structured program that's like pretty well designed. And as crazy as it sounds, you don't actually have to see any performance benefits in the gym. Like maybe your strength numbers actually go down. Like maybe you're lifting less weight because you're practicing 6 times a week and playing 3 games and all this stuff. But like just the act of staying consistent with that routine, going and doing that, those athletes stay healthier. The more you stay healthier, the more you get to practice your sport, the more you get to go compete with your friends, do all that stuff. And like the better you get at your sport just because you're available too.
Absolutely. I mean, I was just thinking as you were talking about how when athletes, I lost my train of thought.
Yeah.
What were you just saying? Can
I repeat? I was just kind of talking about how like you don't even have to like get stronger in the weight room in season. You got to just like stick to that routine and be consistent with that?
Yeah, sorry. Working optimally is one thing that I learned relatively in the last 4 years, that like if you work optimally all year round, like you're going to challenge yourself, because you're always going to have highs, always going to have lows. There's always going to be times and periods where like I feel like crap. Like, yep. I don't feel very good. Like, there's times where you're going to be sick and you're like, I literally probably shouldn't work out. And so you have to progress. Yep. And then there's going to be times where, like, I feel amazing. Like, my sleep's been really good this last week and my nutrition has been on point. I just feel really good. You're going to see high highs. But there's going to be times where, like, if you go off of an optimal variable where you always have a plus or minus from 10, 15% that you can utilize, that's going to allow you to always like work with the weight and the load or intensity that's always going to be appropriate to you all year round.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. People I think sometimes think that humans are robots. Like, oh, I go and lift this weight and then next week I lift more weight and then the week after that I lift more weight, and that's progress. And like, sometimes that does happen, but I'm a nerd and a bit of a geek that I like run little studies on myself. So right now I'm doing like a lot of golf swing speed training. It's kind of a golf off season and that's my passion. And I was like, man, I wonder what the variation is, because some days I'm just faster than others. And so it's like this year, as I was doing it every day, I've jumped on the force plates and it's like, huh, well, like my jump height is down and my swing speed is down. And like, yeah, now that I think about it, I didn't sleep good last night. And then like next week it's back up. And it's like, rather than just be like, oh, my program's not working, I'm going to change it. It's like, no, that was a bad day. But now next week it's back up, but it's not just this steady climb. You have these ebbs and flows based off of all these things that sometimes are outside your control.
Absolutely. Like sleep is one thing where throughout college, I just learned how much that affected me. Cause growing up, I naturally thought 6 hours of sleep wasn't like appropriate for me. Yeah. I'd go to bed right at midnight. I just couldn't fall asleep until midnight. And then I'd wake up at six, get ready for school. And then I'm off to school by 6 or 7 o'clock. And then I'm at school all day until the afternoon. I had workouts. But on top of that too, my nutrition too, that was one thing that was killing me. I didn't know how to eat appropriately. Lunch was always like a thing of Funyuns, cup of noodle, and like a Gatorade. I'm like, dude, that was like maybe some carbs, absolutely no protein, and like fats maybe a little. I was like, dude, I am killing myself with that. Slowly starving myself. And just those two things alone, like as I got older, I learned how to like sleep was super big, and figuring out what was appropriate for sleep for me to get good sleep, and then how to eat good foods that like my body enjoyed and eating more of it. I was like, bro, I feel like a king right now. I feel like an absolute god. I went through a food sensitivity testing recently with a chiropractor, and they like tested out like, oh, like how do you react to coffee? How do you react to caffeine? How do you react to dairy and some of these other things? And they saw that I had a decreased energy response to quite a few of them. And I was like, whoa, dude, I lived my whole life off of those. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so things like that, like the little detail things can change a lot. But that's not where I recommend most people start. Obviously, like we are more advanced when we play around with ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we've been in the field for a little bit. We're like, oh, well, let's try this out. I wonder what this does to me. I wonder what this does to
me.
But like, absolutely, sleep was one where I was like, yo, like if I get a good night's sleep, I feel like a king. I feel like I can absolutely lift the house.
Yeah.
I feel like I can sprint so fast. But if I get a bad night of sleep, I almost don't want to lift. Like I was just like, oh dude, I'm droggy, fatigued. But it's more so like I'm gonna get some movement because I know my brain needs it. I need to move, but like I'm not gonna try and increase my performance today. Like today's not the day where I'm gonna try and like, okay, I'm gonna challenge my muscle fibers to the point where they're gonna fatigue and I wanna get stronger from this. Like today's more of a day where like I just need to move.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome and just really good that you kind of incorporate that. And again, back to these things that we get from parents a lot, and you know, the things that you can get outside of performance training is like, yeah, it's another way that these kids can start hearing these lessons, have someone other than mom and dad say, go to bed on time, how are you sleeping, checking in on those things, like helping teach them about it. Cause we can tell you how many times we have that conversation with someone like, hey, do you know that sleep really impacts your injury risk profile and all this stuff? And mom's like sitting in the corner, like nodding her head, like I tell them that every night. And but sometimes when it comes from not mom and dad, just much better received.
Absolutely. That's all the conversations I'm having right now is as members are reaching out to me, and all the parents are like, yeah, like I tell them about XYZ, I have a strength training stuff, I tell them about this, and they just don't want to listen to me. But as soon as I hear someone else say something, like it's gold.
Yeah.
And they start implementing it in their life. And it's like that's the power that we do have as an external source. So it looks like the people we're closest to, we love them too much. yeah. to want to think that they're actually smart.
Yeah. Yes. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And so it's one thing that even my wife, I'll be like, hey, I want you to try and do this with your movement. And she'll sometimes be like, hey, whatever. What do you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know she knows what I'm doing, but she just like doesn't want to hear it from me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Get her own personal trainer sometime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Well, so that now we kind of established just the importance and that it doesn't have to be 3-4 days a week, even during those busy times. It could be as little as 1-2 days a week. Outside of just the frequency, do you have any other kind of suggestions for busy kids and families on how they fit training into those weeks? Like anything that you've seen work for people in the past?
Absolutely. I think the hardest things, I know a lot of these youth athletes right now and what they're doing, and some of it's just like every day they're doing something, especially like younger gymnastics. It's 5 hours a day that they're doing stuff. And I'm like, yeah. You're doing a lot. Like, honestly, at this point, I don't want to add more to you. The thing what I'd recommend is pull back from the sports themselves.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard to want to do, but I think that they need to pull back and reel in the reins and do it a little bit, especially in that time it's not that sports normal season. Pull back on that. That way you can spend more time doing things that are going to help them take care of their body. Even just rest is a way of taking care of your body. And I think that that's really the thing that I think is most important for some parents to consider, because more isn't always better, in my opinion. I think there's a point where like more is good to do, but there's also a point where like more to too much can cause injuries.
Yeah.
And so there's a fine line of balancing it to make sure that athletes aren't getting injured and they're not stunting their growth and coming up with Oscar slaughters and stuff like that. Like that's a really common thing because of overuse at their age, especially going through growth spurts. And so just helping them prevent issues from coming up. I think just reducing load is one thing. As far as the sport, especially outside the season, like let the kids do their normal seasons and then give them a summer off. Like let them be a kid.
Yeah.
I think it's great that they want to do summer softball or baseball or basketball or whatever sport. But let them be a kid too. Let them go move at different movement patterns. Let them go play, just do their thing, climb a tree, eat or whatever they want to do, man.
Yeah.
Like that's a big thing in my mind for these kids.
Yeah, no, I think you hit a couple of really good points there. The one that you just were talking about that reminds me of what conversations we have a lot is we see, and I'm sure you see it a lot, kids now are so well coached that they are very locked into movement patterns and they don't have, like we call it movement variability or movement degeneracy. Like they can jump in one way or they can march and skip perfectly for like a sprint series, but they can't just like go skip. Or they can't, we work a lot on rolling, like the ability to like tuck and roll, because we'll see kids that'll just like break their collarbones because they just fall and like they just hit the ground. Or like, well, you know, if you like tucked and absorbed and rolled and popped back up, like you might have bruise on your back, but you're not going to break a bone. And we're like, look at this stuff, and they just can't do it because I think they are in so much structured, so many structured sports, and you kind of said it like the weight room can be like the kid's playground in a little bit. And it's a way to just get some of the things that they might not get in practice, you know, that going through different ranges of motion, they're very sagittal, straightforward and back sport. You can move sideways in the gym, in the weight room, and just restore the body's ability to move and solve movement problems and do those things can be really, really good.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that I see a lot of issues with as well is like we see a lot of sport specialization early on. And that's like you're saying, like they're hitting these only using these motor patterns all the time. So they're never getting the other ones. So those ones are getting overtrained to the point where like injuries can pop up more likely. And allowing them to move, like at least being a 3-sport athlete, like where you play different sports all year round, allows you to work at different planes, which helps minimize that. But at the same time, they might be doing the same ones if it's all like basketball.
Yeah.
If it's at least the same, but also like have a hobby that's not a sport.
Yeah.
Like biking.
Yeah.
Freaking snowboarding, parkour. I used to do parkour as a kid. I loved it as random job off stuff. Allows you to learn how to control your body in a different way and basically just play like activity is the number one way to stay active and stay healthy. All burst the studies that I'm seeing is play like activity, the effects of that allow you more likely to want to keep doing things. So allowing kids to move at different movement patterns, I think is huge, but also just be a kid.
Yeah.
Be
yeah.
a kid.
Go out and do that stuff. I think that's awesome. I think something else that you hit on really good that, you know, you're kind of talking about, sometimes you just got to pull back from the sports a little bit, or you got to make time for stuff. And it's something that we talk to people about a lot, is like really assessing where are you performance wise and what is limiting you from your goal. Like if you want to be a D1 baseball player, football player, whatever, I'll use baseball as an example. Like, with a lot of our college athletes, so maybe a little older than what you work with, but we'll talk to them about coming back from school. They just pitched a whole season. They all want to go pitch in a summer baseball league, in the Woodbine League, because they might want to get scouted. I'm like, okay, that's awesome. Where is your performance relative to actually being drafted? Well, I'm not throwing hard enough. Okay, cool. So I just want to clarify that you want to go be seen by the scouts, not doing what you need to do to get drafted, right? Like maybe we should take the summer not competing and like training, so that then you can throw hard enough that the next year you can go play in that league and perform in such a way to do that. And I think that sometimes when it's like pull back or prioritize something else, it's like if your performance isn't where it needs to be, or physically you're not where you need to be, you're going to achieve your goals better by like working on some of those deficits and bringing those things up. So yeah, you're pulling back time commitment wise, but you might be improving your overall ability level there.
You hit on such a beautiful point there. I mean, absolutely. There's definitely a need for that exact thing. I love that you said it the way you did. It's perfect. I wouldn't even touch
it. Yeah. Well, every now and then I stumble upon a good idea. So we're kind of hitting around this topic a little bit, but something that we hear quite a bit is, my workouts need to be sports specific, right? Like I'm a baseball player, I need to do baseball workouts, or I'm a football player, I need to do football workouts or whatnot. I'd just be curious what your perspective is on sports specific training. How important is it? You know, what does that even look like? So I'll let you take that one whichever way you want to.
Absolutely. So here's my belief. I believe that there is no sports specific workouts. I think that sports specific workouts are cute to say, but I don't think you're actually gonna get a lot of benefit out of them. I just believe in training an individual. I believe that like individual needs may be there, as far as what I was talking about earlier with like setting your arch and getting proper glute activation. Like those are things where I get specialized, but I don't be like, oh, if you're a batter, I want to help you with your med ball rotational drives to the wall. Like, yes, that may have some correlation, but if I can get you overall stronger and build general growth of your body, that's going to increase your overall abilities on the playing field of whatever you choose. Yeah. Because that strength is going to turn into power if we incorporate a time variable. That power is going to turn into increased speed or velocity, which is going to transfer over to your sport very nicely.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I go about my business is I'll give you some specific drills if you're at that level. If you're at like, okay, this is the little thing that we need to do to get better. Like that's when you've mastered almost everything else and you need this one drill that's going to like kind of get you over the edge. But that's such a minuscule population of people that need something like that. For the most part, people just need to get generally stronger to increase their overall performance.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I think that that's my take on sports specific.
Yeah. I agree. And I think when we talk to families about this, we hit on similar sports or similar things. Like our philosophy is like, I might watch you throw from a rehab standpoint, because there are some known things that you can do in a throwing motion that can put more stress on your arm. And then we might suggest that you go work with a pitching coach because we have this concern. But it's like, I'm not a pitching coach. I could try to be one, but I could probably help you throw slower. if you're interested in that. But you know, it's like we won't be identifying stuff. Now we're working on specific things. But I feel like when people, and I don't know if you get this too, people say sport specific and they immediately think the exercise has to look like my sport. And I try to help them reframe this and think like, well, and this is over many parents and athletes' heads, but sometimes asking the question of like, well, what if it's not biomechanically specific, as in like the motion doesn't look like the sport, but what if it fits the force profile of the sport? What if it fits the time constraints of the sport, right? Like, okay, you're a sprinter, well, we can do very fast elastic jumps that are mimicking your foot contacts with the ground in terms of how much force you're having to absorb. And so like, yeah, that doesn't look like sprinting, but it carries over very well because of those force time characteristics.
Absolutely. You know, you hit a great point. Sports specific people think a lot of like mimicking the sport,
yeah.
But you strike an amazing side effect of like, well, we can apply forces that replicate that sport a little bit more, so your body can train for that. And I think that's a great approach,
right,
to sports specific, because you're matching the needs in a different way, than just doing the sport. But I'm not going to do any like, if you're a hitter, I'm going to try and do more drills that look like you're hitting, or a pitcher, I'm going to try and make you do more drills that look like you're pitching. Or if you're a tennis athlete helping you with your back swings and stuff, I'm not going to have you hold like a weighted bar and try and do a rotation with that. That's just not going to work out very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to look silly too. And so,
yeah,
I agree. I love that take on being able to challenge motor patterns to replicate the sport, you know, like if you're talking about like some high pogo reaction jumps, or seeing the leg bounce with a band tension or something like that, like that's a great way to replicate sport specific movements.
Yeah. And that's what I think there's just such a misconstruction. I think people in the profession get it, but I don't know, I mean, where it all comes from, and obviously not everyone understands everything that we do, but people always ask us that, and I'm just like, I don't know that you really know what you mean, because it's like, yeah, take your runners, and it's like, well, we know shin splints are really common in runners, well, and stress fractures, well, like doing squats and loaded exercises and depth drops are like the best way to build stronger bones. So like, it has nothing to do with running, but like, if we build stronger bones, going to help you probably be a better runner. So like, that's, I'm like, so is that sport specific to you? Because it's like,
true,
you know, that's where I don't hate the word, that's too strong, but I think it's overly used. And I think that's a really good perspective on how you develop athletes, especially from the long run, which is great with you having that like long runway to work with some of these young kids all the way up to the time that they're, you know, done with high school, which is just a really, really unique opportunity.
Absolutely.
So kind of hit on a little bit, but walk the people through, you know, they come in, they do your evaluation, they get their program, they're ready for their training session. Like what does a training session at ETS look like?
Absolutely. So I'll just touch on the eval again, because it's a really big part of their program. During that eval, like I am really trying to find like what limitations may be lined up for them, what's going to show up the most that needs to be addressed, and what do those exercises look like that can be I can hit two birds with one stone for addressing their body so they could be there efficiently. Right. And that's just a really big part of everything, is just seeing how you move and me getting eyes on you, where it's like you have my full attention for 25 minutes. I'm just watching you move in different movement patterns. Tells me a lot about them. I can get to learn a little bit more about them. I just build a little bit of a history of them as well. That's just one of the biggest parts of it.
Yeah.
And then from there, we do a warm up, a general warm up for about 10, 15 minutes. I get to see how they move in different fashions, where they're going to just do a general ground based warm up, some dynamic movements, some muscle activation. And then we go into a little break to get some water. Then we go into what I'm calling our activation. That's going to be a 10 to 15 minute period where we can do some drills like TKEs. We could do clamshells. We can do a dead hang, things that like maybe addressing parts of their body for extra activation, for mobility work. Just a little additive things. I'm like, okay, these are needed outside of just like getting your body warm.
Yep.
To feel good. And then it goes into either a linear or a lateral change of direction where we can compete. We can challenge ourselves with timers, with gait sprints. We can do extra drills like band resistance sprints, sled sprints, maybe even get in different movement patterns, like doing a handstand competition, doing a dead hang competition. It's like things that make you challenge your body in different ways that normally you're not going to do. We do that for another 10, 15 minutes. So at that point, they're neurally driven. Their body should be really active. They should be sweating at that point. Now they're ready to go get their lift in. That way, I mean, able to microdose in some linear speed change of direction, but also get in these little detail things that I think are so important to get.
Yeah.
When they get to their lift, it's a group setting, but it's an individualized workout. So they're able to grab their folder. They have questions. They go up to a coach. Coach shows them their drill that they're working on first, or their movement they're working on first. They go do that with the coach floating the room, coaching everyone that maybe needs some additional attention. They'll get pulled aside, get shown what to do, get the coaching cues they need. They'll get challenged appropriately. But us coaches are just floating the room the whole time, addressing anything. But some people can be really autonomous. If you've been with me for a year, like, you may not need a lot of coaching on how to do a squat. You're probably going to be pretty solid doing a squat at that point.
Yeah.
But if you get a new movement, I'll show you how to do that new movement to perfection. And I'll coach you throughout the whole time. And I'll flow working with everyone else at the same time, because not everyone needs one-on-one attention. If you put me in a weight room setting, like, I'm probably going to be able to, even at my younger age of like 13, 14, where I was still doing a little bit of lifting, I'm able to do a lot of stuff on my own. If you just show me at once, like, I can kind of do that, and I'm pretty free flow. And I'll take your advice when you come and coach me and give me recommendations. I'll take it then. But they're able to work more autonomously. And I want that for our athletes, because they can take ownership of their workouts. So they go through their workout, usually about 6 to 8 exercises, probably 3 or 4 tiers of exercises that are supersetted together. Takes them probably, the lift alone, probably 35 to 45 minutes on top of like the activation and the warm up. So looking at maybe 75 minutes at max, but I like to try and keep it to around 60 minutes if I can, because that's an efficient amount of time. I don't want athletes there for two hours.
Yeah.
Then once they finish their lift, they do a post-lift workout where they're going to work out some mobility. It could be the general one that I just have on the board that I think address the most important things, which are our shins, hamstrings, hip flexors, kind of just our entire hip, and then a little bit of thoracic mobility as well. And then from there, if they need some extra stuff, they come find a coach like myself, and we'll give them an extra drill if they need it, or if they need their own specialized plan because of the issues that I found during their eval, that's what that can look like. But also, some sessions are like a strength session like that, but sometimes they're going to come in, they're going to do their warm up, they're going to do the activation, and then they're going to spend the rest of the time doing mobility for a day. I think there's a lot of value. Like, I don't want to just continuously keep placing load on you. There's times where we got to pull back and we got to be like, hey, we got to focus on mobility for all day, just teaching you how to take care of your body, because you may not do it outside of here. You may only do it in my facility. And I know a lot of my college athletes, they wouldn't do anything mobility related until they had to.
Yeah.
Until there was like, hey, we got pain, we got issues. Now we have to go see a trainer. Now we have to come in and do some extra stuff before sessions and spend some time after sessions because you're hurting. But let's add it into the program so you have one day a week to help prevent that likelihood of just being injured. And that's what a sessions in general can look like for me. It can range from anywhere of one strength a week, one mobility a week, to anywhere to 4 strength workouts a week and one mobility per week. So you can be in as much as 5 to 6 times a week, or as little as 2 times a week, or even just 1 strength a week. Really depends on their needs and where they're at and how long they've been with me.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to an individual basis.
Yeah.
There's a whole range.
No, that's awesome. Really, really good. Excited to have you guys open up in the area. So where can athletes or families that kind of have heard about this learn more about you and what you have going on over at ETS Lake Country?
Absolutely. There's split 3 places you can find me. Instagram, we got ets.lakecountry.wi. Or you can find us on Facebook, ETS Performance Lake Country. And then you can also go on our website, etsperformance.com/lakecountry, and you can see my profile, my bio is on there, and then you can send an inquiry for us from there, and then I'll reach out to you and get enrolled.
Perfect. We will make sure we get all those links including the show notes. I know you're busy getting ready to open a new gym, so I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thank you very much for coming on, sharing a little bit about yourself and what you're doing, and sharing that with our listeners.
Thank you. I appreciate your time today as well.
Awesome. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Hey, wait a second. Do you have a teammate or friend that's going through ACL rehab right now? We would love to help them. Quite frankly, the state of ACL rehab in this country is not great right now, with many athletes never returning fully to play at a high level and undergoing a second ACL injury quite commonly. We have a free online ACL masterclass that tells athletes and families everything that they need to know step by step from the time of surgery until their return to the field to help them get back, perform at a high level with a reduced risk of injury. This online class is totally free, and you can sign up for it at the link in our bio at kinetic_SMP or at the link in the show notes of this podcast. We would really appreciate it if you would share this with anyone that we could help recover from this injury.